Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Yada Yah Radio. Here we are on another Shabbat. We have James, Kirk, and Larry. Boy, we have a full cast of characters, and I emphasize characters on the line. How are you guys?
Good.
Doing good?
Good. Good. I've been chatting with Richard in the chat room, and I don't mean to. I hope it doesn't embarrass Richard in any way, but you know, I want to share this because I think, in a very small way, the exchange that I had with Richard helps to explain why Yahweh got down on his knees to lift us up. What he gets out of it. Why getting down on his knees is a good thing for Yahweh. I received a letter from Richard that was constructively critical of my framing of productive and unproductive individuals. And, you know, I have this tendency to simplify economics and wealth redistribution as rewarding. What we're doing is we're encouraging more unproductivity because there's all these kinds of, you know, economic plans that provide all manner of entitlements for those who are unproductive. And then it punishes productivity through taxation and regulation and the like. And now, it infers that, and I don't mean to, but it infers that, you know, that productive people are good and unproductive people are bad. And that's just not the case. You know, most people who work hard for a living are productive people and they're good people. And there's a whole lot of people who have lots of money who are scumbags, who inherited it or who made it in a conniving sort of a way. And so Richard was pointing that out.
So we probably hear anything on the
and
show.
And I love constructive criticism. So, you know, I think it was hugely beneficial. So I just shared with Richard that my whole perspective on what it's like to be, for no fault of your own, down and out. You know, we've all heard Richard's testimony. And what it's like to be down and out. And what it's like to try to survive when the whole world and the whole system turns against you. And when there isn't there isn't a single handout that's trying to help lift you up when you're down. Just a whole lot of people kicking you. And it's profoundly changed my perspective. And then the thing that I'm most impressed with, and I've always been this way, is individuals who have been dealt a difficult situation, particularly when it's no fault of their own, who have overcome it. And who have become not only net contributors, but very substantial contributors. And we all know the Bless Yahweh site. And Richard is one of the great contributors to the covenant and Yahweh's message. And so I just simply told him, you know, that you've profoundly changed my perspective. And I've come to view Richard as an extraordinary individual, somebody I admire, I respect, I care deeply about and view very highly. And I get a letter from Richard today that turns all of that into an appreciation of the letter that I wrote, as opposed to what I was trying to do. And it just dawned on me that I didn't know how to write it back to Richard. I don't even know if I'm going to do a decent job of conveying it here. But it strikes me as, and I was genuinely trying to lift Richard up and acknowledge that what he said was valid and that I appreciated him and it. I didn't want anything more than that. I was just trying to tell the truth. And yet, by doing that, I ended up receiving one of the nicest, most uplifting, most positive notes that I've ever received. I just don't think it's a lot different than what Yahweh. What I did is meaningless compared to what Yahweh does. But it just shows what it's like to be part of a family. Yes, Kirk.
Well, pardon me for interrupting, but Terry says that there's nothing going out on the air except for flamenco music.
Yeah, no one in the chat room can hear anything we're saying.
This is not good. All right. So what do you guys suggest?
That's your thought, but
I've given up the call-in number, so if they want to call in and just listen, that's going to be probably the only option that I can think of. They've tried refreshing over and over, and nothing's coming up.
Drag.
Do you want to try to reset it? Everyone calling in was being put on the air, even though the switchboard didn't show them on the air. But I hung up on them, and when they called back in, no one's getting put back through now, so at least they can listen that way.
Wow. Okay. Well, this is not good. Okay. So you put out the number, people can call in, but we have no live stream.
Yeah.
And well, the problem is, if I end the episode, if I end the episode, we have a lot of people that have called in at this point.
Want us to call back in?
You know what we could do is end the episode and try to bring it back up in 10 minutes, if you can do that. I don't know.
Okay. All right. So we have nothing but faint guitar sounds. All right. I'm going to close the show. You know, when Andy,
we should hang up, right?
Okay. We'll try it all again. We'll try to read.
All right.
Okay. All right. Bye, guys.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're trying once again. I want to look at the chat room to hear if anybody can hear us this time. We have rebooted, and it says the music keeps repeating, may have to reboot again. Can anyone hear us at this point? I can't even hear. James, are you there? Kirk, are you there?
I'm here. Kirk is here.
All right. Well, there we go.
I can check downstairs real quick and see if Terry's picking up.
Okay. Hold on one second. Andy is doing an encore. The music is continuing to play. So we don't know if we have anything that is live. The record is skipping. I hear Andy. All I hear is that we have an encore.
Well, so can I do this? Can I do this just between us guys? I'd like to offer up a prayer, okay? And this is a prayer that I would highly suggest to religious institutions worldwide. And it goes like this. Dear Lord, you know, Baal, a title the Creator never uses for himself, we come to you today in opposition to the words you spoke in hopes of deluding you and ourselves into believing we have a real and healthy relationship. We know you're with us every second of the day and require our submission because that is what we all believe. Again, in direct opposition to what you clearly state on more than one occasion. And as we praise you in hopes that religious ass-kissing will work and then will work to further manipulate you, we will continue to run with religious traditions written by men that oppose you, knowing you will protect our families and children as we see miracles you give us daily. We bow, realizing that you have an ego problem, and we are constantly respecting you by showing our fear for you and showing your dictatorial nature while you dominate us into submission. And we love you, because we know if we don't, you'll burn us in hell. And what's not to love about that? Anyway, we have a list of things that we want, and although we never really listen to your words, we know we're so important that you do listen to ours. And you'll give these things to us, because just like you, we have something in common, which is very poor judgment skills. And we love everybody, just like you do. And we will check out by paying homage to the Egyptian sun god, Amun-Ra. And remember, ignorance isn't really bliss. It just abides.
Isn't that the truth, though?
Yeah, that's one of the notes
really
I put out.
Great example. And, of course, they don't do it to manipulate God or try to encourage God to deviate from his plan. They do it entirely to manipulate people and get them to pay them money and homage.
We have an oil. Is good now.
Was
all is good?
They can hear us.
They can.
Okay, so
all right. Well, you know, the last time I tried this, I attempted to pay a tribute to and to speak of Richard. I'm not going to do
that. But first, I want some acknowledgement here. My prayer worked.
There you go. You manipulated
that's a miracle.
Now, I want to tell you that makes me feel very, very uncomfortable, but nonetheless, let's go right back to the Yobel. It is presented in the Torah, in the heart of the Torah, in the book of Shemot, the names, Exodus 19, the conversation begins with 5 and 6. And since this was so profound, let's just retread the ground that we were on last week. It says, and now, if... You know, there's not a lot of places that's a hypothetical in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. But this is a hypothetical. This is, if then.
Where are we reading from in the Yobel again? I'm so sorry.
Shemot the names, Exodus 19, 5 and 6 is where we're beginning. I'm really covering this as the Yobel, Yah's Lamb chapter was rewritten in Yada Yah. Is the basis of this, and we're just talking about what these words reveal. And it says, sure. And now, so then, at this time, if. Now, if thens are part of logical decision-making. They're a chain of events. It's cause and consequence. You know, if you do this, then this will happen. So Yahweh is laying out what I would consider to be the single most if-then causal link statement there is anywhere to be found, anywhere in the universe. If you will do this, then I will do that. Now, if you like what Yahweh says will be the consequence of what he is going to do, then you may want to, if you haven't already, and probably everyone has this listening to this program, has already accepted the conditional clause, because the benefits are conditional upon us responding in this way. So now, if you genuinely, consistently, and absolutely, without reservation, listen to my voice. Okay. That's a lot of words for Shama Shama. Genuinely, consistently, absolutely, without reservation, listen to, and then my voice is cold. Shama Shama. Why do you think, guys, that it is appropriate to write, if you genuinely, consistently, and absolutely, without reservation, listen to, as opposed to just write, if you hear?
Because he said it twice. He punctuated it. It's a big deal. Pay attention to this, and then pay attention to it even harder. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Shama Shama means this should be considered exponentially. Everything.
Yeah. What verse are we on? I'm sorry. It just passage. I just
this is 19,
kind of 19.5.
19.5. Okay. So if you genuinely, consistently, and absolutely without reservation, it's listened to. Shama Shama. Well, there's more to it even than it's being repeated. There's also the fact that it was written in the call, which means literally, in the infinite absolute, which means absolutely, and in the imperfect, which means consistently and continually. So if you consistently, continually, genuinely, literally, absolutely, without reservation, listen to, pay especially close attention to my voice. Okay, so... Fellas, we talked about this last week, but it bears repeating. Had the Christian New Testament been written?
Nobody had invented that by a long shot.
Was there an institution called the church?
No.
Nope.
Mm-mm. know, was there a anything other at this point in terms of a message from Yahweh that you could recite and thus listen to? Was there anything in existence anywhere in the universe other than the Torah?
No, there wasn't even a rabbi.
No, there was no rabbi. There was no oral law. There was no Talmud. There was no Mishnah. There was no Christian New Testament. So this is predicated entirely on one book. And at this point, it's only two books of that one book, two chapters of one of that book. Two
yeah, because we're in the Shemoth here.
Right. Shemoth happens to be the second of five or six books that comprise the Torah. And so Yahweh says, if you genuinely listen to my voice, do we have Yahweh audibly communicating much to us apart from the Torah? I mean, yeah, he talks to Abraham, but that conversation with Abraham is found in the where?
That was probably
in the Torah.
In the
in the Torah, in Barber Sheet. He talks to Noah, and the conversation he has with Noah is found in what?
Torah.
Again, Barber Sheet.
He talks to Adam. Where's that conversation
found? Same place.
Right. So if you're going to listen to Yahweh, and he talks to Moshe, and he talks to the children of Israel, and where's all that found?
In the Torah.
Right. Yep. So if you genuinely, consistently, absolutely, literally, without reservation, listen to my voice. Oh, and there's another thing here. Huh. And you obey me, no? And you fear me, no? And you worship me, no? And you grovel at my feet, no? And you join the church, no? And you pay me money, I need money bad.
Yeah, sure, he does, yeah.
Yeah. No, okay.
He made up that scheme to print worthless pieces of paper and put other people in submission.
Yeah,
that was a plan right there in the Torah.
Yeah, so if you listen to my voice, and what is the second thing that God wants? Because he's only asking for two things. If we do these two things, he is going to treat us individually as if we are the most important thing in the universe to him.
To completely observe it.
Right. Shamar. It's Shama and Shamar. You know, we have been saying, as part of this witness, as part of this covenant family, as part of everything that we are about, you know, if we don't have a group other than the covenant. Well, we don't have a leader other than Yahweh. Well, we don't have a constitution other than the Torah. What we have been saying over and over again is that all God asks of us is for us to be observant, for us to listen to what he has to say, for us to closely examine and carefully consider what he has written. And if we do that, we'll come to know him, we'll come to understand what he's offering, and we'll be in a position to accept it.
This should absolutely blow you away.
It should.
So little he's asking for so much. I mean, really?
It's important that we emphasize this, because I was being facetious, but it's important that we emphasize this, that God asks for us to fear him. No. That he asks for us to bow down to him. No. Did he ask for us to worship him? Did he ask for us to praise him? Did he ask for us to obey him?
Or pray to him.
Right, or even pray to him. Did he ask for any of those things? Did he ask for us to acknowledge that we're sinners?
No.
Nope. He just asked us to observe his words.
Did he have four spiritual laws here? Did he mention the gospel of grace?
No.
Did he mention the church? Did he mention Sundays and worship? And am I mistaken here, or did he say there's only two things that I want you to do? I want you to listen to what I have to say, and I want you to consistently, genuinely, and completely observe everything that is associated with my covenant.
My Torah. My covenant relationship.
My covenant. Bereth.
My contract.
Yeah, that's, it's pretty clear that's what's going on all the time. That's why pointing out his nature and what's going on and the fact that 15 billion years is 6 days. You know, these are the important things that get people to say, okay, I'm going to observe Torah.
Right.
Because they come to realize that things are real here. This is no longer a kindergarten Sunday school game.
That's right. And the God who proved that he was the creator at creation, with every word reflecting the science of what he did, just told us, if you listen to what I have to say, if you pay close attention and carefully consider my covenant, then you will exist on my behalf, be able to approach me, and be with me, a highly valued, set apart, protected, and treasured commodity, distinct and separated from all other people. That's the quid pro quo. What God is saying here, and it takes a lot of confidence to say this. What he's saying is that I understand that who I am and what I'm offering and the way that I'm communicating the terms and conditions of the covenant and its benefits is so overwhelmingly beneficial for you that there is no one in their right mind ever in all of human history that's going to carefully consider and closely examine the details of this covenant and not accept it. Because he's predisposing our acceptance. He is saying, if you simply give me a shot, if you carefully listen to and examine and consider what I have to say about my covenant, then you're going to be treasured. He's predisposing the fact that anybody in their right mind who considers the covenant is going to accept it.
You know, that's a...
How could you not?
It's a very small request up here. I mean, it really is.
Profound. Yeah. Particularly when you consider who's making it.
Hmm. Well, particularly when you consider it's the only truth in the world.
Right.
That's right. Huge. I mean, just from a philosophical standpoint, that's huge, isn't it?
Right. But who is it coming from? You know, Larry, you've invited some members of the covenant to dinner at your home. And you're a good guy.
Yeah.
And that's a nice offer. But, you know, you're not the creator of the universe. You didn't prove that you're
offer. I didn't want people to know that. Thanks, Yada.
Yeah, I just want to point that out. And, you know, dinner is nice, but eternity is better. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, what you're offering is a good guy offering a really nice deal. You don't not expect anything of anybody other than they just show up, and show up with a reasonable attitude. And here's the creator of the universe offering perfection, immortality, adoption, inheritance, empowerment, and enrichment. And
okay,
he's
that's
proving
got me
he's the creator of the universe. So he said, you know, I'm gonna presuppose here that the deal that I'm offering is so beneficial for you that anybody in their right mind who listens to what I have to say and carefully considers the terms and conditions and the benefits of the covenant is going to say yes.
Well,
it's
if they
can
carefully
say no.
One thing's for sure: if they carefully consider what he said. And then look at what happens, what has happened, okay?
Right.
Then they are stupid if they consider anything else other than that to be true.
Right.
You know, there's not 100 truths. There's one.
Yeah. You know, I am pleased to be immortal. I think that's a pretty good thing. I am pleased to be perfected because I'm pretty flawed. That's a good thing. I am pleased to inherit what God has to offer. He's got a lot to offer. I'm pretty excited about the idea of being enriched with his teaching because I really like to learn. And I'm pretty excited about what empowerment means in terms of going to the seventh dimension. All that sounds pretty cool to me. But you know, the bottom line of the whole thing is I'm just content to be considered a treasured commodity by God. bottom line is, that's more important to me than anything else. Because if God likes me, if he cares about me, if he thinks that I am worth knowing and spending time with, the rest of it, you notice they say, is a lay down hand. The rest of it is a fait accompli. I don't need to worry about the rest of it.
I did want to ask you, did you get a chance to see that video that I shot over to you?
Yeah, I didn't see the whole thing. I did get it today. I started.
Well, you don't have to see the whole thing.
I didn't see the whole thing. You know, I saw enough of it to recognize that that God is consistent. He has done everything he can do to prove that he authored the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and that he has done everything he can do to reward those of us who are diligent about Shamar and Shama, everything regarding his Torah as it's presented in Hebrew. Isn't that what he's basically saying? If you closely examine this, you'll be rewarded.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You seek, you'll find.
Yeah. And doesn't
hey, dummy, this is real type of thing?
Right.
Hey.
Right.
Hey.
Yeah.
It's real, dummy. Check this out.
That's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we talked a lot about
that's
this.
That's astounding
week.
In and of itself. Nobody knows that it's real.
Right.
It's,
and I want to reemphasize this because I think it's important. Larry, you spend more time than I do these days actually dealing with people who do not yet know Yahweh. And so added proof that he authored his Torah, Prophets, and Psalms in Hebrew, and that he codified every Hebrew word like Eretz, like which is the Hebrew word for earth, and or the Hebrew word for light, the Hebrew word for moon and for sun, that he coded each of those words with a number value that describes their scientific nature, so that we at this crucial moment in time could come to be absolutely certain that he authored the Torah and Prophets, and therefore closely examine and carefully consider what the Creator had to say, is of gargantuan importance.
Can I share something with you guys?
Yeah. Let me just finish this one thought, and then, for you and me, I need nothing more. I mean, I've long reached the point where it is so obvious that he is God, and so obvious that he can be trusted and relied upon, and so clear as to who he is and what he wants, and how little he's asking and how much he wants to give, that added proof at this point is like saying, you know, do you want an inch more water in your swimming pool? You know? Okay.
As the saying goes, it's all gravy.
Yeah. Go ahead, Larry.
Oh, I had shot that same thing over to an agnostic, if you will.
Uh-huh.
He watched it. He said he was very, very impressed with it. And he said it really did lead him, this is what he said, it's interesting for me, it's another clue for the controversial theory of aliens that have been visiting the Earth past. And I want to thank you very much for sharing. This is a doctor.
Wow.
A medical doctor, MD.
Wow.
My wife's cousins. Who was just down here recently. Actually, the last day William was here, he was here having dinner. How in hell does that get there? I said, those were Yahweh's words. That's Torah.
Yahweh's an alien, apparently.
I suppose
Yahweh is
Allah.
Alien to this man.
Right.
That is true.
Yeah, true.
And so Yahweh, as an alien, did visit the earth. All
I did say
all
that
true.
To him.
Yeah,
I did
true.
Say that to him. And that's about where I left it. I said, but we might want to seriously consider how to get him to meet him. That's what his words are all about. You know. But anyway, I just thought that was an interesting.
You know, there's a there's a line in the Psalms from Dodd which explains that the Torah is easy to understand for those who are
open-minded.
There you go. Yeah. If you're looking
for
aliens,
I was kind of blown away.
You know, no matter how convicting, how convincing the testimony is, it don't matter.
I just didn't see Yahweh pointing to aliens as the answer. That's all I was saying. I mean, I found it strange.
So if we want to be considered valuable to Yahweh, if we want to be set apart to Yahweh, if we want to be distinct and separated from all other people, which for the most part Yahweh detests, then we need to closely consider examine the covenant. Now, I would ask you, what does it mean to shamar Bereth? What does it mean to examine the Torah? How do you go about examining, observing the covenant?
Well, you have to read it first and then analyze it first.
So when you take part in it, you share it,
right.
you set those days aside, you think about what they mean and what it is Yahweh's trying to get across to us.
Right.
And that's what it means to me. I don't know what it means to anybody else.
At this point, all that existed of the covenant, all that existed, 100% of what existed of the covenant is what Yahweh discussed with Abraham. Now, there was a covenant that Yahweh created with Noah. It turns out that covenant reflects every attribute of the covenant that Yahweh created with Abraham. They are one is a dress rehearsal for the other. But 100% of what's known about the covenant is the discussion that Yahweh has with Noah and then with Abraham. Mm-hmm. That's all there is to it. So if you're going to observe the covenant, if you're going to listen to what God has to say about the covenant, all you can do is read Bereshit. That's all you got.
Well, I mean,
Yahweh is saying that what he says in Bereshit is enough for him to treasure you as the most valuable commodity in the universe.
Well, it's a marriage contract.
It is.
So, I mean...
Well, if all we had to go by was Abram's story, we'd have enough.
That's enough. Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't think we would get to... but we really don't get to where we, actually set days aside and so forth until we get into Korah.
Well, that's right. You wouldn't have the days that are set aside because they're not presented until Korah, which was presented immediately hereafter. But it was really simple. It was walk away from your country, walk away from your family, walk to the place that I have designated for you. And then it was to trust and rely on me. Mm-hmm. And you can do that without the Bikra. Then he says, and walk to me and become perfect. Now, at that point, you have to read further. You've got to think about, how do I walk to Yahweh and become perfect?
But if you were studying it, then you would ask that question.
Father, what does that mean
to walk and become perfect?
I've come to view Torah as the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It's all to me, because it's teachings and directions.
Uh-huh.
I mean, And so,
is this not Exodus 19?
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't Yahweh already described the path that we walk to Him? Isn't Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim already presented as part of the Exodus now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't we know the path that we need to walk to Him to become perfect?
Yeah.
Aren't we now at the point in the story where He has revealed the Torah on Shavua?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you've got the Mikra. Yeah. Walk to me and become perfect. They've already been part of this walk.
But then to Larry's point, it's still an ongoing learning relationship.
Right.
I mean, it's not going to die there anyway. So, I mean, but as far as becoming part of the family and understanding you're treasured, that you're actually considered a jewel, separate people, then, so that's all we need, but that's not all we want. It's like, correct. Joe said, that's not all I want.
Yahweh didn't end his testimony with the presentation of the covenant. He provided testimony and witnesses and prophecies that expand our knowledge, that enrich our understanding, that empower us to know more, understand more, to grow more. So it's an ongoing story. But God is clearly saying here that what you know already about how I created the universe, how I related to Adam, which is a indicative of what eternity is going to be like, how I isolated and set apart Noah's family, and Noah by having listened to me, Noah having acted upon my instructions, was saved when the rest of the world was washed away, and then how I reached out to Abram and asked him to walk away from Babylon, from religion and politics and the human institutions, and walk to the promised land, and how I gave him the terms and conditions of the covenant and provided him the benefits of the covenant, and now how I have turned to facilitate the promise that I have made and to take the children of Israel out of slavery and in Egypt and liberate them, beginning with Pesach and Matzah and Bechorim, and now here we are at Shavua. Hasn't he explained the whole? I mean, everything we need to know has been explained. Not everything we want to know. Not everything God has to say. But it's certainly everything we need to know for the if-then to be effective.
Everything he said mm-hmm. up to that point should also lead people to understand this is a real proposition and there is no religion involved. Because there was no religion involved in these conversations with Abram, with Adam, with Abraham, with Noah, with Enoch.
Yahweh has not mentioned religion other than to say, don't engage. He hasn't mentioned worship. He hasn't mentioned prayer. He hasn't mentioned bowing down. He hasn't mentioned fear. He hasn't said anything that would be even remotely akin to any religion.
No, he's named a lot of people that he doesn't like. And then when you look at the roots of those names and what it all means, these are things that tell you, you know, you really don't want to be any of these things.
Can I just simplify the whole thing? The if-then that Yahweh, mm-hmm. Creator God of the universe, is offering is based entirely on knowing and understanding.
Yeah.
What else is there? I want you to listen to what I have to say. I want you to closely examine and carefully consider my covenant. And if you do these things, I'm going to value you and set you apart. Isn't the if-then based entirely if God said, I want you to come to know and understand?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more than that. Come to know and understand.
Would you not add respond?
Yeah, but you know, the response is that we have to invest in...
Well,
listening.
We have responded.
We have to invest in observing. So yeah. That is our
response
to Yahweh's message. That's what's so interesting about this. Yahweh is stating unequivocally that if we listen to him and carefully consider what he has to say, then he's going to value us. What he's saying here is with total confidence. If you genuinely listen to what I have to say and you carefully consider what I have written regarding my covenant, you're going to accept. You're going to respond. Of course you're going to respond. Who wouldn't respond?
Sure.
A lot of people wouldn't respond.
I don't think they're closely examined.
No, I don't think so, Larry. I think that what happens here is that people don't listen to what he has to say. They don't want to hear what he has to say.
You're right. No, you're right. You're right.
That's a good question.
That's a major issue.
Ready to get and they give it up.
You know, they want to tell you that the Torah was written by four people, and that and Jay and the priest and the Jehovahist and the priest and the this and the that, and they want to tell you that it means law, and they want to tell you that it's a wrathful God. They want to tell you, oh yeah, we're scholars, we've studied this. No, they haven't listened to what God has to say. they haven't closely examined and carefully considered what he has to say. And God said, if you do that, if you just give me a shot, give what I have to say an opportunity, you're going to accept. It's the one thing that I would say is maybe my single greatest disappointment and probably my greatest single sense of accomplishment, if I were to boil it all down to one thing for single greatest disappointment and single greatest sense of accomplishment, it's the same thing. It's how disappointed I am that I never figured out that there were five terms and conditions of the covenant, that the covenant was written with conditions, and that there were five of them, and if we wanted to participate, we needed to come to know what they were, understand them, and respond to them, and that there were five benefits of the covenant. It took me a lifetime to get there. Disappointing.
And so say we all.
But in terms of a sense of achievement, coming to recognize that, independent of everyone other than Yahweh's testimony, single greatest achievement of my life.
Hmm. Yep.
This paragraph, when we've spent two Shabbats on it, there is nothing I've ever read that is as affirming as this is of the conclusions we've all drawn regarding Yahweh, his covenant, and our role in it. He goes on to say, because indeed, on behalf of the entire earth, you yourselves shall actually and continually exist as a realm of ministerial messengers and a people set apart. This resonates because it strikes me that Yahweh would be fully capable, if he wanted to circumvent circumvents. If he wanted to say, hey, you know, I'm God, you know, deal with me. He could be the sun in the sky. He could be louder than the wind and the thunder. He could be more brilliant than the lightning. He could be in our face, in our ears, in our eyes, all the time. And he could be unequivocally, undeniably God. But that's not his style. His style is to say, you know, I created man because I wanted to spend eternity with humankind. And I want to treat humankind as something to be genuinely treasured. And so, I want to work with you. I'm going to be here. I'm going to show the miracles of prophecy and the miracles of accomplishing whatever needs to be done and the miracles of divine revelation. But I'm going to work through. I'm going to convey my testimony through people so that I'm not so imposing. And that makes people Yahweh's messengers. Pretty cool.
You know, I looked up those two words last night, and my gosh, that's pretty heady stuff, what those words actually mean. Priest and chief officer and prince and reign and kin and kingdom and walking among the people and royal. I mean, he's calling some pretty cool
stuff.
Yeah,
Mamlaka. Yeah, Mamlaka is a blend of two Hebrew words. At least, I'm just going to go from my intuition here, not from the lexicons. But Malak and Malaka means the messenger, the envoy, the representative who conveys the testimony of another. Mm-hmm. That's Malak. And Malak also is royalty.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who leads, someone who represents royalty in the sense of Yahweh as the King of Kings and us as his children. We are his heirs. We are royal. And so this is a highly dignified, highly elevated, highly important position of messenger. This is the messenger of God. And what God is saying to us is, that we're not only going to be valuable to him, we're going to be deployed by him as royalty to convey his message. Because we're not conveying Yahweh's message. You know, Kirk, you talked with a bit of a southern accent, a little southern bit of a drawl. And there's not a lot of people that would view royalty speaking with a drawl.
They don't.
But from no, they don't. But from God's perspective, yeah. You're king. Well, you're royal. You're a prince.
That's heady stuff, I tell you.
It is heady stuff.
Oh, what he thinks of us, I mean, that's the way I'm thinking. My gosh, he thinks so much of us. Wow.
Yeah. And that he.
Well, I'll tell you what I've noticed.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I've noticed is, and it doesn't matter. You can go back to ancient Rome.
Okay.
It really wouldn't matter where. They all speak with an English accent. I know because I've seen it in movies.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, because the English are so arrogant. So here God is saying that we are his witnesses. And, you know, what's kind of interesting, as flawed and as failed as we may be, we're still able to come up with profound insights that will resonate with those who are rational and open-minded and who are genuinely interested in the truth. Regardless of our deficiencies, his message will still resonate. I was the deal that I did for 10 years where I did all of the radio talk shows, and I just realized that, you know, if I'm working with Yahweh, that's good enough. Then, you know, what I have to say is going to resonate with those who are open-minded, and ultimately, those who are open-minded are going to find God.
Strange. It's strange that there's so few. It is really strange. It is a strange thing.
Yeah. Strange. Because it's so contrary to what the people want, which is why God has said here twice, a people set apart, a people distinct and separated from all other people. We're not the majority. We're not the masses. And God doesn't want it that way. What Yah is looking for is individuals who want to be with him, individuals who want to learn, individuals who don't want to clutter up and pollute eternity, individuals who bring their own perspective, but yet who acknowledge exactly who he is and what he is asking of us. And if that's acceptable to you, then welcome to the family.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's Craig, I heard you say a pretty profound thing once. I think I think you were still doing the show with Yoel at the time. And, it was just Yada Yada Radio at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you came to a point, you know, at first you thought, wow, I'm going to put Yada Yada out there. You know, this is... The dam's going to break, man. You just can't hold it back. I've got so much reality in there. And then you came to the point, you said, but wait a minute. Then I realized if Yahweh's words were true, what I was sharing would never be popular. You know,
until
there at the very last second when it's too late. You know,
right.
Yeah, that's the truth of it. It could not be popular.
Right.
Yeah. It's profound, isn't it?
But
truth cannot be popular.
Today I got a letter from one of our brothers. Sometimes you get a letter from somebody that's first coming to know you, and that's great stuff. And sometimes you just get a letter from one of the brothers that's been in the family for a long time, and it's great stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
It's more than good enough. I genuinely do not care how many more people choose to join Yahweh's family. It's not a big deal. There's enough part of his family to make eternity eternally fun. And if there's more, great. The more, the merrier. But we're never going to be the majority and don't even want to be because the majority is pretty creepy.
You know, it bothered me for a while, and you said something about you won't want those people to be there. And it occurred to me that, you know, everyone that gets there is going to be empowered unbelievably. And can you imagine somebody who really doesn't want to be there being allowed in and then being in power? You can't ever get rid of the guy.
Oh, man, talk about
it. It would make it hell.
They're
going to
be miserable
and miserable
love company.
These guys are the most powerful beings in the world, in the universe, and they hate us.
Well, you've got to know that what these people would drag in there are the very things Yahweh says he hates.
Yeah.
Right.
What a miserable place that would be.
Right,
you're absolutely 100% on.
Yeah, I think this is true for all of us, but I know it's true for you and I. We really do not like authority. We have a real tough time with somebody dictating. You know, a cop comes in belligerent and says, you know, you lay down on your face and I'm going to arrest you. We're just not going to deal with that well. And
you probably read my psych profile.
Here we are dealing with the creator of the universe, the ultimate authority, the ultimate power. And one of the reasons that we are really comfortable around him is he doesn't act like an authority. He's not bossy. You know, what a deal. You actually get to have a relationship with the most powerful individual in the universe, and he's not throwing his power around. He's not trying to get you to obey. He's not trying to usurp your freedom. He's trying to say, hey, you know, I realize the more I empower you, the more I enrich you, the more inheritance that I give you, the better it is for me.
I don't think most people get that. Well, in the Christian world, doesn't get that at all.
I know, doesn't get that. Yeah, the more God gives, the more he gains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it says here then, these are the godly words and statements, Debar, which relationally and beneficially, Asher, you should continue to speak to, Debar El, the children who engage and endure with God, Yisrael. Okay. So God has told us that there is a message we should continually repeat to those who want to engage and endure with him. What is the message that we are encouraged to continually repeat to those who want to engage and endure with God?
Walk away. Go to Yahweh.
Listen to what Yahweh has to say and closely examine and carefully consider his covenant.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you do that, you'll be special to him. That's the message. If you say nothing more than that, that's the message. There's no message here about but I, Paul. There's no message here that says Jesus Christ. There's no message here that has a church in it. There's no message here that has Christmas or Easter or a Trinity. There's no message here of you tattoo a cross on your buttocks. There is nothing here other than you should continually for all time tell those who want to engage and endure with God, Yisrael, what I have just said. And what he has just said is listen to me and observe the covenant.
But, you know, right here he also said right out to ministerial messengers, he uses the word Gawi for people, which blows Paul's message out. I mean, this is individuals of different races and places. Remember, Paul said they were his. Yeah,
right.
They ain't yours. His ministers are all these people. They're mine.
Right, and they're not mine in a sense that he owns them.
No.
They're mine in a sense, like, for example, I have two sons. I don't own either of the two of them. I have never given either of the two a dictate. I do not give them commands. But they're still my sons, and I will give them everything that I can give them. The more I give them, the more I get back. It's the nature of the covenant. The covenant is Yahweh's children. We're his. And so Yahweh said then, and Yahweh said, now this isn't Jesus said, this isn't Allah said, this isn't Buddha said, this isn't Lenin, Marx, Lincoln, Washington, or Jefferson said. This is, and Yahweh said to Moshe. Does that mean that Yahweh is speaking in first person?
Yes.
I don't get the part of this which says, and Moshe said. But I, Moshe, said. No. And
no, I don't get
said,
that either. I don't get that either. Yeah, I mean, I understand Moshe was great, you know, as people go, obviously, because he listened, you know. But I have heard people, you know, one of the great truths of rabbinic Judaism is that Moshe was the greatest prophet. Well,
no,
how is that?
No one.
Well,
I mean, in terms of, first of all, in terms of just prophecy, there is none of the prophets, the so-called prophets, are prophets. All they are is that they're scribes. They wrote down what Yahweh said.
Yeah, they could hear Yahweh when they wrote the words down. And the one that wrote the most words was Yahshayah, I believe.
Yeah, but keep in mind that that's not Yahweh's perspective on it. Because he considers Yahshayah and Yirmiyah and Moshe and Dod as prophets. He considers them prophets. And he considers them prophets because they listen to what he had to say. They're open to what he has to say. They understand what he has to say. They closely examine and carefully consider what he has to say. And then they share it. That makes them prophets. Yahweh values them as prophets because of that attitude, that approach that they have. But we talked about this in Shattering Myths today. The single most important person who ever lived. The person who had the single greatest influence on human history is Moshe.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't come up with anybody in all of human history that rivals Moshe in importance. He's the best known, the single best known historical character of all time, who had the single greatest influence, and he didn't start working with Yah until he was 80 years old. But it compares to him in terms of importance. And what did this 80-year-old do? He wasn't a very good speaker. I'm sure he wasn't very formidable at 80 years old. He simply said, "All right, Yah, I'll do what you ask. I'll act upon your instruction. I'll go where you want to go. I'll share your words." That was it.
Luck and coin.
Good enough. Good enough.
Right. I mean, that's my point. There obviously isn't a greatest prophet. You know, there are prophets, and then there are, you know, everyone else.
Yeah. Well, I think that is true, that Yahweh is the only real prophet, but he has chosen to acknowledge many. He gives us lots of credit. Now, you know, we're called his malacha. We're his envoys, his messengers. He gives us more credit than we probably deserve, but that's just his nature. That said, well, I would never use the term greatest of the prophets with Moshe, because Moshe's role, a minor part of Moshe's role was prophecy. The majority of Moshe's role is what happens when someone accepts Yahweh's guidance and acts upon it. What happens? Regardless of their flaws,
good things happen.
What happens?
They're covered.
Good things happen to them, I'll tell you that.
Right. And good things happen to those who listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And what was the one thing? There's only one thing that, I should say there's two things. There are two things that Moshe did for us. What are those two things?
I wrote down the Torah.
Well, that's one thing. Yeah, that's a pretty good thing.
Mm-hmm.
He led the children out of Yisra, out of bondage.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. That's what his name means. He led us out of bondage. And so the Torah that he is delivering is the means to draw us out of bondage. Now, did Moshe provide the miraculous means? Of course not. But he's credited because he worked with Yahweh to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Did Moshe write the Torah? No, of course not. Although, to his credit, the Bahim is in Moshe's voice, which means that he understood it, that he processed it, that he cared enough about it, that he shared what it means and how to apply it. I mean,
The Bodim is a commentary on the Torah. And yet, Yahweh was so impressed with Moshe's commentary on the Torah that he got it, that Yoshe quotes the Bodim all the time.
Yeah, pretty big deal.
That's a pretty big deal. So we're reading the story of what happens even if you're 80 years old, even if you're feeble, even if you're an accused murderer. In fact, an actual murderer.
He was, yeah.
Yeah. Even if you've spent a significant part of your life on the wrong side, working for the wrong team, in the lap of luxury, at the and luxury that was enabled through the direct manipulation and enslavement of others. Even if you spent 80 years doing that, 40 years doing that, 40 years tending sheep. You know, 80-year-old guy that's got a stammer. Look what can happen. Look what can happen. He wasn't the only one, but look what can happen. This is what happens if Yah's working through you. He says, so, and Yahweh said to Moshe, the one who draws out, one of my favorite Hebrew words, pay attention, henna. Stand up, look up. I'm going to come to you in a cloud. This cloud is designed to block some of the light, in order for you to hear my word with you nearby, and also for you to have reason, for them to have reason to trust you. Well, there's two thoughts here, a minor one and a big one. The minor one is, why did Yahweh conceal himself in a cloud? Why did he diminish his light in a cloud?
Keep from overwhelming us.
Yeah, I mean,
pretty bright.
That's half of it. I think that half of it is to keep from incinerating us.
He's not
and
really
the other half is keep from. Yeah, is because he's just not showing. He says, "I'm going to diminish my light. I'm going to cut it right back." Why? Because I want them to listen to you. I want to, rather than impose myself, I want the children of Israel to choose to engage with me, not based upon my superior position and ability and power, but instead based upon the testimony that I'll provide for you. I want them to think about it.
It's really faulty. I mean, that's what we call down south, really faulty.
Yeah.
He's very considerate of these people.
Yeah, it's considerate. And humble and saying, you know, I'm going to take the guy that speaks poorly and I'm going to have the guy that speaks poorly communicate my words because I want you to consider what I have to say and not be impressed by who's saying it.
You know, people might want to consider that because every time they go out and they throw accolades at somebody, it's because they've got a beautiful way of putting things. You know, and that's really not what this was about. I mean, you know, getting to reality is not about who can sound or pontificate, you know, in the most incredible way. I mean, that's how they elect politicians today. That's how mega church is about.
Yeah, the best sounding pastor gets the largest church.
Right.
Right. And so the most influential guy in human history, he is a stutterer.
He didn't have that problem.
No, he was a stutterer. Because it was the message. We're not going to use an ad hominem argument here. It was the message. And Yahweh said to Moshe, pay attention. I'm going to come to you in a cloud of light in order for the people to hear my word with you nearby and also for them to have reason to trust you.
You.
So, trust whom? Did Yahweh say, I'm going to diminish myself in a cloud so they have reason to trust me?
Well, he said, trust my word through you, that you said.
Right. I want them to trust you. And what is Moshe saying? He's conveying Yahweh's Dabar. We had it twice, Dabar in the previous statement.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the godly words which relationally and beneficially you should continually speak to. So if you speak Dabar, Yahweh's testimony, then and through those words you see Yahweh's light. You have him hovering over these words. Then they'll have every reason to trust you. And that's what God wants. He wants us to convey what he had to say. It's like when you sent out this movie, this video of the math of the Torah, the math of Hebrew.
Right.
People reason to trust what you have to say. Not because of what you have to say, but because of what you're saying about Yahweh.
Well, it's got nothing to do with me. I mean,
right.
Really.
Right.
I don't suggest anybody acts like me. I've heard you say that on the show.
Yeah.
I mean, and of course that's true. You know, if somebody came up to me and said, I know Yahweh. I really know Yahweh. And, you know, he was making sense. And then he said to me, and so I want you to try to be like me, Larry. I would walk away.
Yeah.
I mean, that minute.
Right. Because we can't be.
Right.
You know,
we don't have much to do. Our personal lives, I mean, that's the problem with religion, isn't it?
Right.
They're all good people. But what the hell's a good person?
Yeah. It's one of the reasons that I feel no pressure at all. I think that's the reason why none of us feel any pressure, any responsibility here. We enjoy sharing what Yahweh has to say. If Yahweh's words resonate with someone, wonderful. If they don't, you know, that's their loss. It's not our loss. It's not God's loss. It's their loss. And we realize that Yahusha himself, Yahweh himself, had very few people that chose to take them up on what they were offering. The if-then that God has just proposed, one in a million people avail themselves of it. So why not just rest and relax in it and to realize that if God chose a stutterer to convey his Torah and to convey his name to the world, he's really not asking a lot of us. We can just relax and enjoy it. Moshe didn't start until he was 80 years old. God's not in a hurry. Relax and enjoy it. Very important. And all we really have to do is share Yahweh's testimony. So he says, I want you to hear my word with you nearby. And so they will have reason to trust you. You're right. What Moshe was saying was Yahweh's testimony, which means they would have every reason to trust Moshe, because Moshe was quoting what Yahweh said. In fact, this next statement affirms it. And so Moshe repeated these words, these statements of Yahweh to the people, to the family. Moshe repeated the Dabar, the words. Larry, about a week ago, you sent out I was interacting with a young man. I don't know how old this fellow is. He just struck me as a young man who was walking away from the church and come to know Yahweh, and he still had some confusion on the new covenant, because in one of the three they're not all witnesses. It's written in one eyewitness account, and then it's in two hearsay accounts, where Yahusha speaks of the covenant that is being affirmed during Passover. And two of the three accounts, one of which is an eyewitness, Matanyah, two of which are hearsay, there is this description of how the bread, the matzah, and the wine represent the role that Yahusha is personally playing to enable the covenant. But in one of the hearsay testimony, it's different than the other two, and there's the word new added to it. And you realize, okay, one thing's not like the other two. One of them is wrong. Which one is wrong? Because one or two have to be wrong. There's no way that all three can be right when they say different things. And well, I just explained it's because I like to paraphrase. I like to say, this is what God said. There is no new covenant. And what you sent back was this whole list of, well, this is what Yahweh said about these things. And my response to you was, you know, it's hard to go wrong when you're just citing Yahweh's testimony. And you said,
yeah, my response back to that is, it's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah, but that is what Moshe is doing. Moshe is saying that he cited Yahweh's testimony. That's why he was credible. If you're citing Yahweh's testimony, you will be credible. You'll always be right. And so Moshe reported, he shared, he communicated the words, the Dabari of Yahweh to the people, to the family. Thus Yahweh, therefore Yahweh said to Moshe, walk to the people and set apart the day and the next day, because they may want to have their clothing clean. They should have apparel laundered. So, does God run a dry cleaning service?
No.
I don't think so. No. And at this time, weren't the children of Israel out there in the middle of the wilderness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they weren't exactly in, you know, dry cleaning areas.
Right.
That's true.
Were any one of them in impressive outfits?
I would think not.
No. Well, maybe the lowing. Maybe the lowing kind of were. You know.
Yeah. Was there a religious outfit among them? They all were slaves in Egypt, and they're simply now in the Exodus. Some 50 days after leaving Egypt.
No, nobody's got anything.
No.
These guys are looking like the Amish out there.
Okay. Really, really plain. And is there a sanctuary? Is there a church? Is there a basilica? Is there a synagogue? Is there a temple?
No.
Nada. So, I was just saying, listen, we're going to do something special. And because I'm inviting you to something special, come with your clothes cleaned. You know, you're going to feel better about this if you come with your all cleaned up. But understand that what I'm sharing with you is about cleaning you up. It's about giving you a garment that makes you look really clean. Perfect, as a matter of fact. So the idea is you may want to have your clothing cleaned. Is not God saying, you know, you should go to the laundromat. It's God saying, you know, you may want to pay attention to these couple of days because I'm in the business of cleaning you up. I'm going to buff you up really nice. Like, I'm going to give you a garment of light. You may want to have one of those.
Sounds like muscle.
It's any cleaner than white. And they should choose genuinely to be totally prepared and established on the third day. Gee, where is there a important day followed by a second day that leads to a third day that we're established on the third day, we're cleaned on the second day? Boy, do you know anything about being cleaned on the second day and leading to being established on the third day?
That sounds like Martha.
Boy, doesn't it sound a lot like the first day being Pesach? Leading to matzah, we're being all cleaned up, leading to being established as part of Yahweh's family on first fruits, on firstborn children.
Sure is consistent, isn't he?
Yeah, man. I mean, how could he be more deliberate than this? More, you know, I'm going to clean you all up on the second day, and you're established on the third day. Pesach, leading to matzah, leading to Bukkotim, the most important 3 days in all of human history. Yeah. It's all there if you listen to what he has to say. And matzah is about cleaning us up, and Bukkotim, firstborn children, is about establishing us into his family. That's our adoption paper. And they should genuinely choose to be totally prepared to be established on the third day. Prepared to be established. Are they establishing themselves?
No.
But after Pesach we become immortal, after Matzah we become perfect. Are we therefore prepared by Yahweh to be established as part of His covenant family?
Absolutely.
Now, didn't He tell us at the beginning of this that if you'll closely examine and carefully consider my covenant, then you're going to be valuable to me? Is He not now delineating the means to make that happen, Larry?
Yeah.
Didn't you say that, you know, what does observing the covenant mean to you? It means paying attention to the mikra. Didn't He, isn't He saying, Larry, you're right?
Well, yeah. Yeah. It is. I mean, that is the correct way to do it. There's no doubt about it.
He's saying, yeah, you're right. Pay attention to the first 3 days of the mikra. The first 3 days of the mikra cause us to be perfect. They cause us to be wearing a garment of light, and it caused us to be established in His family. Because indeed, in the third day, Yahweh will descend to approach before the eyes of all of the people upon the Almighty's Mount Sinai on the third day. So, you know, what happened in year 4000 Yah? Didn't Yahweh, as the set-apart spirit, descend upon the soul of Yahusha for all to see?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah. And isn't Sinai and Moriah equated, that Sinai is the Torah, and Moriah is the living manifestation of the Torah, the place where the covenants is
established? Was
established. The two mountains. Yeah.
And confirmed.
Right. And doesn't Yahweh have to descend to get on His knees to lift us up as His children?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He has to bend down. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right.
He had to
That's
get down to
so
a
stupid for us
level.
To be worshiping Him when He's the one descending to lift us up.
Yeah, and that's again why in this first statement about the Yobel that we're talking about, he's really talking about us taking a serious, realistic look at it. I mean, you can say that as well as genuinely observe. You know, it's a serious, realistic look at what's going on here. I am the creator of the universe, and take a serious look at me. You know, and if you seriously look at it, all those times Moshe was talking to Yahweh, He never went in there and begged on his knees and said, "Oh, I love you." And,
no, never.
You know, did any of this
never have prayed,
absolute
never have
monkey nonsense that is religion?
No.
And how the religious people can take these words and twist them, you know, like obey, like command, like, you know, faith, all these things. They're just a hair off. Well, they're more than a hair off. They're 180 degree opposites. But in our languages, they appear to be just a hair off.
Right.
You know, when they're
now, this is just so amazing. You know, it says, because indeed in the third day, Yahweh will yarad, will lower and diminish an aspect of Himself, coming from a higher, more elevated place and state to a lower one. All right. Isn't the Torah a diminished manifestation of Yahweh?
Mm-hmm. This is word.
Right.
In Hebrew, yeah.
Yeah. And isn't the fire on the top of that mountain a diminished manifestation of Yahweh? Isn't the cloud a diminished manifestation of Yahweh?
Absolutely.
So the Torah itself, that cloud and the fire on the top of the mountain, are all diminished manifestations of Yahweh. And this is, He will descend, and this is La Ein. Law means to approach, and Ein means to see. So He's going to approach so that we can see Him. You want to see Him? You want to approach Him? You want us to see Yahweh approaching? Read the Torah. What are you saying? He's going to approach. That's what He provided on Mount Sinai. So, in order for us to facilitate observation, didn't He just say, "I want you to observe the covenant"?
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, "I'm going to approach so that you can see Me." All of the people upon the Almighty's Mount Sinai. So you should choose to participate by setting up a complete boundary. Of your own volition, you should engage by arranging limits and setting bounds for the people all around for the purpose of communicating. I want you to be especially observant regarding your approach to ascending upon the mountain and making contact with the totality of his limits and extremity. Now, Yao is not too much in setting boundaries. He's far more about liberating and not confining. But there is some confining that needs to be done, because if we're exposed to Yao without availing ourselves of the covenant, well, we're in trouble. But beyond that, does Yahweh have a broad path to him where everybody is accepted?
No. Narrow is the way.
Right. Boundary.
Well, there are people that listen to him, and then people that listen to men's traditions, and then we know,
right,
obviously, which of the two is, right, is greater,
right,
and we know,
right,
which of the two is greater.
I'm going to confine who is part of my family. You're outside of those confines, you're not part of my family. If you've got a way that's different in this way, if it's out of bounds, it isn't going to resonate with me. You really ought to be careful. There's very strict guidelines and boundaries on this path to me. Don't waver from it. That's what he's saying here. You should choose to participate by setting up a complete boundary of your own volition. You should engage by arranging limits and setting the bounds for the people. God is not accepting of everybody. He is not tolerant of various different modes to him. He is not going to accept that which is inconsistent with his testimony. While God is liberating, he's freeing. There's only a very finite means to accomplish that. He's not tolerant. He's not open. This is a very narrow path for which there is no tolerance for wavering off that path to him. So I want you to be especially observant. So here he's saying, that path is delineated in the Torah. You want to be part of the covenant? You want its benefits? Pay attention. I'm setting the boundaries to that path. Now he's saying clearly that all paths don't lead to me. I'm not going to grade on the curve. There is no gray area. Pay attention to what I said. Particularly since there's only 5 conditions to the covenant, for crying out loud. It's only 5. What's the big deal? But don't add to them. Don't delete from them. Understand that those 5 conditions set the boundary for entry into paradise, for entry into heaven, for making contact. And apart from those being very close, apart from closely examining and carefully considering those term conditions, you aren't going to make contact with me. So it says, and anyone who makes contact with the mountain, he will absolutely die, resulting in eternal destruction. Muth. Do not reach out and make contact with the hand, because indeed he shall be removed and die in a cascade of stones. Either that, or he shall be hurled away and destroyed. Whether an animal or whether a man, he shall die, ceasing to exist. So God is saying, man, if you listen to what I have to say, if you closely examine and carefully consider my covenant, this is all going to work out for you. You know, you're going to be treasured. But if you don't, if you think that I'm going to accept you just because you're a nice guy, because you really want to be accepted, because, you know what, you've been misled and that's not what Christmas and Easter means to you, then no. Be careful.
Is that the same like when they touched the ark and they died?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. we're talking the same thing.
Don't do it. Yeah. You cannot. We're flawed. But matzah perfects us. If you attempt to come to God in a manner other than Pesach, Matzah, and Bechorim over these 3 days, if you attempt to come to God in a manner other than the first three Moed Mikre, then it's not going to work out for you. You're just going to die. You're going to cease to exist. You have to be perfect in His presence.
Pretty clear.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. And God wants us to know that while all He's asking of us is to listen to Him and observe what He has to say about the covenant and to focus on His words, He says, that's all you got to do, and I'm going to treasure you. Understand that that does not mean that I'm all love, that I'm all accepting, that that you can do as you please. You can do as you want, but you're just going to die if you attempt to come into my presence doing whatever it is that you want. So, no gray area, no wiggle room, no variation, no New Testament, no gospel of grace, nothing. It's the terms and conditions of the covenant, or you're going to die. With the drawing up and extension of the ram's horn of Yah, the Yobel, they should, of their own volition, always and genuinely choose to ascend by lifting up in association with this mountain. So, here's the first mention of Yobel in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Yobel. It's got four letters.
Mm-hmm.
It communicates the power and influence of Yahweh's Lamb. How would you define Yobel based upon the letters, Kirk?
Well, you start with a yod, and of course that's his hand reaching down with an open palm reaching to help us, to lift us up, and then of course
right.
The second one is a waw, which would be a increasement. He obviously wants to increase his family. That's what he's doing this for, and to build a family.
Uh-huh.
Third letter, of course, is a bet, which is the family home, and which happens to have a little narrow doorway at the top to get in. There's only one path in to the home.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you have the lamb, and for people who are to be led. You know, he leads
right.
us around. He is our lamb. He is our shepherd.
Right.
It leads us, and it stands for trumpet, which means also flowing, which means in the oldest meaning, flowing out of something, like flowing of a substance, there's a stream, flowing of wealth, water, or sound. In this case, we're using the sound because the clearer meaning is the trumpet. So he's it's the flowing of that sound. So that's in the heart, in the core of it.
Yep, and it says that if you want to be lifted up, mm-hmm. and this is Ein Lamed Hey. Ein is the, you want to see and perceive, Lamed the shepherd, so as to be standing up, reaching up, and engaged with Yahweh, Allah. That the way to accomplish that is to understand the implications of the Yobel.
All right.
And the implications of the Yobel, it's the year that Yahweh liberates.
Sets
the
free.
Yeah, and exonerates and forgives debts and frees slaves and returns the land, the realm, to its rightful heir, which is Yahweh and his children. So that's the way to be lifted up. That's the, if you choose of your own volition to be lifted up, then you're going to understand by extension the role that the Yobel plays. And the Yobel is Yah's lamb is God. Yob and El. Yob is the lamb of God. Job is the hand of God. Job is the family of God. Job is the enrichment of God. So it's God's hand being established, being enriched, being protected as a family of the Almighty.
Even the root is really good. It's just the bet and the lamb. I mean, the family that's led.
Right. It's the family that is led by the hand of God.
Right.
Yobel. And he's saying that the family that is led by the hand of God is the family, those individuals choose of their own volition to be lifted up. All based upon what was conveyed on Mount Sinai. That this is all in association with this mountain. Did the mountain speak? Did the mountain write? What happened in association with that mountain? Only one thing that happened in association with that mountain. Only one.
The Torah was delivered.
You want to be lifted up? Right, the Torah was delivered. And so you want to be lifted up? There's one thing that happened in association with that mountain. And that's the Torah was delivered. And he's saying that the Torah's promises, as it was delivered on Mount Sinai, are emblazoned in the purpose of and the description of the Yobel. And he also said that as it relates to this Yobel, pay a special close attention to the fact that it occurs over 3 days. On the second day, come clean, because that's what I'm going to do for you, and on the third day you're established. So guys, it's about as clear as it becomes. And it's all about observing the covenant and listening to what God has to say, and in particular now understanding the role the Yobel plays in us being part of his covenant family. All fits together. He's telling us the story of how we become his children. What we need to do to be respected and revered by him.
Yeah, I'm still looking at Yahweh will descend. I mean, where we're supposed to do everything, he's the one that's descending. I mean, just I know it sounds like a minor point by now, but it still blows me away. He's doing
this perspective is the same perspective we have everywhere in the Torah. Yahweh's descending to lift us up. It's not us lifting, it's not us descending to lift him up, which is stupid. It's him descending to lift us up.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the way it should be. It's the way he wants it to be. The way it ought to be. The way it makes sense.
Father-child relationship, sure. Mother-child relationship, same thing. Yeah.
Yep. Well, fellas, we got off to a rough start with Blog Talk Radio being uncooperative, but whoever had the suggestion of let's shut it down and reboot it, that worked. That along with you mocking religion.
Thank you, JB.
Yeah. So I want to thank you all for being part of this. It's I'm excited to be telling the story of the Yobel. I feel like you all do. It's an honor to be able to convey his message.
Yeah. It's fascinating stuff. So I'm always glad to talk about it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got typed it at the end of the show there. My wife let some big news drop in the chat room, and I've been talking with people about that. We found
are
out
you're
last
expecting?
Week. Yes, we are.
Wow, congratulations.
So, I've been talking with people about that for like the last 15 minutes now. So.
Congratulations. Well, now you know there is no better part of living. That is the... It's the ultimate excitement of marriage. So congratulations, JB. Congratulations.
One more way to
pass
Yahweh.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you will find in that experience a million ways to better understand the covenant and how it exists. Do we need to have that to understand the covenant and appreciate it? Of course not. But it's certainly a marvelous way to understand God's perspective on us and the nature of descending to lift someone up. It's a great example of how you can intend to give, and the more you give, the more you get. It's the ultimate equation. That's the whole family covenant, parent child experience is the ultimate equation. Is the more you give, the more you get in return, and you get to see what it's like as a father or mother to get down on your knees to lift your child up, and why that's the way it should be.
Oh.
We're happy for you, JB. Happy for
Indeed.
You.
Indeed. Excited.
Yeah. All right. Well, good night, Joe.
All righty. Enjoyed it, and good night to JB and Larry as well. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Good night, guys.
See you later.
Bye. See you guys later. Bye.